It's time.
It's time.
It's time. It's time.
It's time.
Time.
It's time.
Time to think about the things that you otherwise wouldn't say. Lucky for us, these two will say anything.
Come on!
It's time for The Fawcast with Chris Williams and Mark Charter. The Fawcast is powered by Charterhouse Real Estate. Why pay 7% to list your home? Choose the flexible 5 or 6% plan for you at charterhouseiowa.com. Hear more from Mark following this episode.
Listen very carefully.
Shall we do this then?
No, just take it one time.
An audio experience unlike any other starts now.
Welcome to this week's podcast. We're on location. We're at the KXNO studios today because Ross Peterson is our guest. And I wish, and we can't get into it. I wish that the last 10 minutes of this conversation would have been recorded because it's been pretty epic. But that's why I just turned on the mics, because we're in a really good spot right now. So I believe we should begin podcasting. What's up, guys?
Do you think that's fair to give a tease like that?
No, but probably not, but it's really not stuff we can take to air, because it's about a friend of ours.
Agreed. It's good information. It's
about a friend that asked us not to share that information.
Yeah, so it's very personal.
So let's get into related stories.
Okay.
Do you have any friends who have either made out with, attempted to make out with, or had like some sort of celebrity encounter?
Sexually.
We're talking, I don't mean like, oh, I was at a White Sox game and Snoop Dogg sang the national anthem.
Yeah.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Awesome. That's
an inside joke. The listener is a fanatic.
Yeah, right. There's an epic one that I have.
It wasn't me. It was a friend of a friend. I do not have an epic one, okay. but just because he was just in town, a friend of mine, was a fan of Gavin DeGraw, the singer that was just in town, and she was telling
what's the top Gavin DeGraw song, just so people know. I don't want to be anything other than a band. That's it, right?
God, can you butcher a song any worse than that?
The kid is one of the most awful singers
Stop
I've ever heard.
Ross.
He keeps saying like, "Oh, I've got to be."
I'm
in love with a girl.
I'm in love with a girl.
He sings. Follow Through is a good song. Chariots is a big one.
So what, did you have a friend that wanted to hook up with Gavin DeGraw?
No, someone that I knew made out with him.
Okay.
So it's not a sexual story. It's just like a backstage.
That's sexual.
Okay. That's sexual. That's what I was talking about.
Make out thing.
That's definitely sexual.
Did any weird stories get back to you about Gavin DeGraw? Like,
no,
man,
he's got a 14-inch tongue. No. In fact, I met him. Like, you guys are famous. You guys do this all the time. But it was kind of cool for me. So when Gavin DeGraw came to town, and a lot of people out there are like, who cares, dude? Gavin DeGraw. All right. In the realm of singing, songwriters, musicians, he's relatively well-known.
Absolutely.
Right? Radio play, all of that. So when he was in town a couple weeks ago playing Nightfall on the River, my good friend John Liebel hooked me up. Star 102.5 was doing something. I went over to the Science Center.
I saw your pictures.
Went over to the Science Center at noon.
Oh, they don't have a studio in their building that they can do stuff like that in?
I have not.
That's weird, because we do here at the iHeart really Studios.
The Science Center was kind of cool, though.
A nice little venue down there.
Beautiful place down there.
The Science Center had this little room where they probably do science experiments.
Well, and they probably rent it out to radio stations that don't have their own.
So there were probably 30 people in this room.
Okay.
Gavin came out and his drummer and a guitar player, and they came out and did, I think, three songs.
Those are cool. Those
talked
intimate.
A little bit about the songs between them, and then afterwards we got a photo with them, shook his hand, said hi. I told him
I'm waiting. Yeah, like, did he grab your wife's ass?
Where is this going? Because I know your wife.
The story's going nowhere other than he's a real nice guy. But you ever meet when you meet famous people, you always wonder, what's it going to be like to meet him? Are they going to be a dick?
Yeah.
Are they going to be
super
nice?
Most of the time they are.
He was one of those guys that if it's genuine, is nice. If it's not, then they're great at faking it. But he was one of those guys that every person that came up very much look him right in the eye. And obviously we all know who he is, but he's like, hi, I'm Gavin.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And that makes me like him more.
I'm with you.
The dude was a nice guy.
That's cool. Good for that. Good for
so
Gavin
he didn't
to
snob
grow.
Anybody. He was happy to
Worst
take
celebrity
pictures.
Encounter any of us have had. Go.
Well.
Well, I ran up to Dikembe Mutombo and called him Manute Bol to his face.
That's not good.
Did that in front of his family. Like it was.
Where were you at?
In New York City. We were out there to watch a Yankees game in 1997. And we were staying at the DoubleTree Suites Hotel in Times Square. I mean, it was beautiful.
Wow.
So when you walk in on the ground floor, it's just a bank of elevators. Right? It's a great big lobby with elevators. And you get in the elevator and you go up to the second floor, and that's where registration is and the desk and all this. My buddy and I had been there for a day already, and we were just walking around Times Square kind of doing sightseeing. And we walked back into that big lobby, and there is this... A family that's obviously from Africa. I mean, the women are all wearing African dress, yeah. and one of the guys is like 7'5", right? He's huge. Like, I know that guy. And that I was 17 or 18 years old, and I like get all antsy, and I run across this lobby, and I have my finger in the air, and and his family's getting on the elevator, and they all turn around. And as they turn around, here's this little 5-foot-something white kid, and I run up to his face, and I go...
You ran up to his kneecaps.
That's Manute Bol! pointing at him, and the ding of the elevator doors happens, and the elevator doors close. That's the last thing his family sees, is some dude rush up to Dikembe
Mutombo. So how did you find out it was Dikembe Mutombo?
Oh, I knew right away. As soon as I said, that's Manute Bol, my brain went, that's not Manute Bol.
Other than them both being black and extremely tall, they don't look much alike in the face.
Yeah, except for the fact that they're the only 7'4" Africans on the planet. I mean, I didn't do too bad. It's not like I called the guy, you know,
yeah,
Scott Baio. Right? I didn't screw it up that bad.
Yeah. Scott Baio, where'd that come from?
I don't know.
That's a really
Charles
weird name.
Charles in charge.
Since we're in my office recording this, I met Don King like the day before I called
great photo.
Dikembe Mutombo, Manute Bol.
Man, you had
Don
a hell
King.
Of a trip.
Yeah, it was a fun one.
That's awesome. I have no, obviously I have not met many celebrities in my life. I've met a few, but I have no bad ones. But I did one of the fun ones. I was in Chicago eating at Ditka's restaurant.
Ditka.
And Ditka was there.
Whoa. Wow.
He came over, said hi, got a picture with him.
That's cool.
How old were you when that happened?
I would have been, when would that have been?
Were you a
kid? I was in my 20s.
Oh, okay.
No, I was in my 20s. All right. He had clearly been spending a lot of time out in the sun. I still have this photo, and it's I'll link it on the podcast Twitter page. But it's the reddest face I've ever seen on a human. Like, I think it was a sunburn or it was about to stroke out. But it's my wife now. And I and Ditka. And
that's awesome.
We didn't expect to see him at his own restaurant, which maybe we should have, but he was nice.
What's yours, Chris?
I had a horrible encounter with Jason Whitlock.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the sports columnist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, and I probably, like, looking back, I shouldn't have even approached him, but I was in college. I was running Cyclone Nation at the time, and I was covering the Big 12 basketball tournament in, like, Dallas. There are... Back in the day, we don't get this anymore, there's media hospitality rooms, which is basically, it's like a giant trough full of ice and free beer and food for the media. It's at the media hotel. It used to be awesome. And it kept the media from having to go out on the town or whatever. Jason Whitlock was there. I was, I think, a junior in college. And I was not drunk. I was very respectful. And I walk up to him and I said, Mr. Whitlock, I'm a junior at Iowa State. I really look up to you. I think that I really admire your work, and I just wanted to introduce myself. And the son of a bitch wouldn't even look me in the eye or talk to me. And one of his, like, posse members basically, like, pushed me away from him. Hmm. And I lost all respect for the guy at that point. It was a horrible experience. Now, looking back, being 32 now, that's not the time and place to do that.
Yeah.
He's there on his own time. And I shouldn't have done that. But I was a junior in college, right?
Yeah, looking back on it, the right thing for him to do is to shake your hand,
look
in the eye, say good luck.
Are you sure it was him, though, and it wasn't Scott Baio?
No, I'm 100% sure. This is before...
Or maybe CeeLo Green. They kind of look alike, right?
Look a little bit alike.
Well, and this was before he was big time, too. I mean, I think he was at the Kansas City Star at the time. That's why he was at the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, that's not
he was covering
big
Kansas.
Time somebody.
Like, I don't know who the guy was, and he asked me to leave, and I was like, okay. And, like... I mean, I don't even think he shook my hand. Like,
if you
was
big time
really
somebody, you better be big time.
So you know? I have. So I can tell you my funny.
Yeah, let's hear the funny one.
Yeah. Okay. So, a friend of my wife's back in late '90s goes out to the Funny Bone. I think I'm pretty sure this happened in Des Moines. Either way, Pauly Shore is the comedian. You know the Weasel, Pauly Shore.
Dude, I grew up.
Jury Duty. You ever see that movie?
Era.
Son-in-Law.
Yeah, Son-in-Law.
Biodome.
See, now you're talking about movies I've seen.
We're all familiar with the Weasel,
yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Well,
Encino Man. That was one of my favorites.
Encino Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Weasel wanted to become familiar with my wife's friend. Okay.
He wanted to show her his
Pauly
weasel.
Shore?
He wanted her to see the weasel.
Pet the weasel.
Okay.
All right. Got it.
So this is a famous guy. Got some pull, right? He can probably get away with some antics. She's up for this thing, apparently. She ends up back at his tour bus. And Pauly Shore is like, all right, you hang out here. I'm gonna go in the back. And I'll be back out in a minute. Like, he goes to get ready for this
rendezvous.
Yeah, romp. It's about to happen.
Yeah, it's about to go down.
The story goes that he comes out of the bedroom wearing footy pajamas. Okay.
What do you mean footy?
A one piece.
Oh, nice.
Footy pajamas
that your daughter probably wears
at night. This grown man who's trying to have a sexual encounter with a woman, a pretty girl. Comes out of the bedroom after telling her, I'm going to go get ready for our big romp. And he comes out.
He needed to go freshen up.
And he comes out wearing footy pajamas. And apparently, refers to himself as the Weasel, never leaves this character. And she basically bailed on the situation.
Really?
Said, I can't do this. And
see, that's the power of celebrity, though. You don't.
You can be somebody else.
He didn't have to go in the back room and splash on some Old Spice. I mean, he
didn't have to give himself the pep talk.
No, he can put on the footy pajamas.
All right, we're about to do this.
If you want to do me, I'm a celebrity. You'll do me in my footy pajamas. You know, that's what
I actually kind of respect that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Footy pajamas move. I mean,
absolutely.
I did that to my wife this weekend. Hey, baby, how you doing?
I'm always interested in. I watch. I like rock and roll documentaries. Do you ever watch those?
Yeah, a lot of them.
So recently I watched.
Ross has seen half the documentaries ever created.
History of the Eagles. These are 2-3 hour documentaries, all the way back to how they joined and became a band and all that stuff. I was watching that one. I watched the other day. I was watching Tom Petty, mm-hmm. one on them, and all those guys that are old enough. They all went through the era of drugs and rock and roll and sex and. I always wonder today, Chris Connolly would be the guy to ask, and he would never tell us the truth on this at all, and I wouldn't blame him. But it seems like today, do they still do the backstage groupie thing? I think if they do, a lot of these artists come up before the show, and they've got their big tour buses, right? I think if they're doing it, that's when they're doing it, before the show, because after they bail, especially in Des Moines.
Yeah, that's what Connolly was telling us
a couple
weeks ago.
I think they're getting the hell out of town.
They don't stick around like they used to.
Yeah, because you envision, think about back in the 80s, right? Poison gets done with the set. You envision them just hanging out
just
backstage,
convincing girls to talk dirty to them.
Yeah. Giving them the pass, they come back, and who knows? Shenanigans are happening, right? But now they rush into their whatever.
You hate Poison, right?
Hate Poison. Yeah. Motley Crue would have been a much better example.
Yeah. And they get out of town. But I remember I've heard stories of certain artists coming to town, and they get here several hours before they need to be here, and they just kind of hang out in their RVs.
I think
that's when it probably happens.
My guess is that the younger up-and-coming artists are the ones getting the groupies.
The old guys are over it.
Yeah, they don't need that anymore.
At this point.
They're done with it. There's a country bar in town, and I've heard stories about this one douche who will show up, and he, expects all this special treatment in the bar and stuff like that. And he, he's in his young 20s.
A country artist.
Yeah. So I don't think George Strait would ever do that.
Well, if they did do it, they're doing it in private. I mean, in this era of social media, I mean, that stuff gets out pretty darn quick.
I was wondering with the social media, does Tinder help a guy out when he's touring
around? If you're Dierks Bentley and you just get on Tinder, is that what you're saying?
I'm confused about every time we have this Tinder conversation. I find out I know less and less about this.
We talked about it last week.
So can you on this show?
Yeah,
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
So can't you set it up to so it's people around you? So you do a GPS thing of hey, I want to talk to people
absolutely.
In a 20-mile radius.
Yeah,
Dierks Bentley. That's why he gets here 4 hours early.
Yeah,
you got to have a couple hours to get the swipes.
You got to unwind a little bit. Yeah.
It's very loosen local. Up. When I went to Vegas a few years ago, we were with a friend of mine, single guy, very good looking. And like the plane had not even reached the gate yet. And he had already updated his Tinder to Las Vegas to let Vegas people know that he was now in the area.
How'd that work out for him?
I can't confirm or deny anything on that. But it could have worked out well if he wanted it to.
Okay.
This was one of these guys. Like
we've been talking about Tinder a lot.
I won't mention his name, but this is so interesting to me. Social experiment.
We're married guys.
I might have talked about this a while ago. So this guy is pretty. Okay.
Okay.
Pretty. Done modeling. Been a model. People say he looks like a model. He was a model. He's done modeling.
Like pretty, like handsome, or like Keith Urban pretty.
No, prettier than that.
Because Keith Urban's pretty because he looks like a girl.
No, he's the type of guy that girls pay attention to. And we were in the lobby bar, some other people in our group and him, and we were kind of sitting in some seats away from the bar, and there were a couple of girls mm-hmm. up at the bar sitting next to each other. And we said, it wasn't really a dare, it's just like, go up and say hi to them. And he's a really friendly guy, great smile, all of that. So me and my buddies were kind of sitting back just watching. We were observing. Because when two girls are at the bar and a guy approaches, right, it can go a number of ways. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to watch him work. He just went up between them, like tapped one on the shoulder, just said like, hey, how you doing? My name's
So he
X.
didn't. He didn't say to her, excuse me, I wanted to just tell you you're the most beautiful girl in the world.
Nothing at all. He went up.
It's not what I told him.
He went up.
You're completely
introduced himself.
That out of portion.
Smiled at them, etc. Yeah. But here's
the
thing.
Introduced himself.
But we're watching. We're watching from the cheap seats, right? We're watching from the cheap seats. Right. And what you notice is, so imagine like the ugly guy goes up and tries to do that. They're going to be like, you know, closing the gap so he can't get in. Yep. They're going to be like, buzz off or away. These girls, like, were physically opening up to him. They were like doing the hair back, like getting the hair out of their face, laughing within 20 seconds of meeting them, mm-hmm. like inviting them to join. It was great scientific research.
Yeah,
like certain guys can just break in like that very
all because
easily.
Of the way DNA made your face look.
Exactly,
it's amazing.
Exactly. It's about the symmetry.
You could be really handsome and have no self confidence, and chicks wouldn't care though. Because
what do you mean? They wouldn't care. What do you mean? Which way?
If you don't have any self confidence, it doesn't matter.
Oh yeah,
self
confidence is huge, but it's also the symmetry
look
of your face,
like Biggie,
the height of your cheekbones.
Look at Biggie Smalls. Dude was pulling all sorts of chicks, and he's
okay,
this
now, hold
fat
on.
Guy.
Now you're changing.
He
yeah,
around
but that's rich.
You're
and
changing
famous.
It. Hold on. Ugly with great confidence equals success. Cute with no confidence equals success. Okay.
Hold on. I gotta break some news.
You can be good looking and not have confidence, girls are still going to want you. The DNA, it's all about DNA. It's all about sexual attraction. It's
confident,
all about animal magnetism.
In my many years of research, confidence is huge.
I agree. For guys
huge.
Like me, you got to have personality, you got to have confidence.
I think females are attracted to confidence.
I 100% agree. Yeah. I'm not denying any of this. What I'm saying is physical attractiveness will overcome
it overcomes
any deficiency,
a lot.
Any deficiency in self-confidence.
I don't know if we were talking about this last week, but have you had this situation where you maybe know of a girl only through appearances, right? And let's say you think she's a 9 or a 10, okay? And then you meet her or him, you be a dude, and you have a conversation and you walk away thinking they're a 5 or a 6.
100%. Yeah, that happens a lot.
The personality ruins the
yes,
looks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it does work the opposite way. Sometimes you might think, they're 5 or 6.
I know he's a friend. I know you guys went up and talked to him. But to me, Chris Soules, the bachelor guy, that talking to him, it was like, this guy's a wet blanket. And there was just no personality there at all. Great looking human being.
Yeah.
Obviously no trouble with the ladies.
Yeah.
Personality like a wall.
A mile wide and an inch deep.
Right. Right. And so again, that to me, an example of a guy that if God made you good looking, good on you, man.
It's a step in the right direction that you had nothing to do with.
It's a leg up.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. You know?
Sorry, just breaking a little news.
What were you breaking news?
Do you need to break it here?
No, it's nothing.
Well, because you've already broke it, so you can tell.
It's Naz Mitrelong signs with the Pacers for the Orlando Summer League, the Kings for the Vegas Summer League. Matt Thomas going to be a Toronto Raptor for the Summer League. So, boom, there we go.
That's a nice segue into the draft. Could we talk about the draft last night?
Yeah, I'll talk about the draft.
So here,
I could talk about the draft for 3 hours.
All right, here's my quick take on the draft. The actual draft itself on TV. Thank God for LeVar Ball. That is some of the most boring 5 hours plus of television you could possibly
Everybody's
watch.
Got their own taste, because I was riveted.
You know, it's. I'm just saying from the perspective of entertainment only, right?
What are you looking for out of the draft?
You, I don't know, but he was the only excitement of the evening. Here's my point. You've got these guys that for the most part are broke, right? The top 10 picks were freshmen, okay? No money. Maybe they've been lent some money at this point, but they're not rich. These guys aren't rich. So most of them have no money. When I was 18, 19 years old, I didn't have any money. You guys probably didn't have any money, et cetera. They've all just, and that's probably the reason they call it the lottery, they've all just hit the lottery. They've all just realized that their dreams have come true. Now they're multimillionaires, right? It should be the most exciting time of their life. And they get up there and they get these droll answers and showing no emotion, really. And they're talking about the inside of their suit code and what was in there. Nobody gives a crap about that. LeVar Ball's up there saying all sorts of cool stuff, man. You can hate the guy, but he's the only entertaining thing that happened in that draft last night. There's no other entertainment. Are you getting information? Absolutely.
But I could argue that information is entertaining to some. Like, that's why Ross watches documentaries.
Yeah, good point.
But you could read the draft and get the same outcome. You don't get anything visually
would you
by watching.
Do that? Nobody wants to read the draft.
I'm just saying there's nothing visually stimulating about it. Nothing happens. Every interview is boring.
So what are you looking for out of it?
I don't. You need some fireworks or something, you know, with like the fifth pick.
My point is like it's clearly a taste thing. Some people like the draft, some people don't. Like, my question is like, what are you looking for that would make you enjoy it? Because I thought last night's draft was really enjoyable. I enjoyed it. I watched pretty much all 5 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. And obviously, it's your career. You know, that lends something to it. It's what
I was waiting on.
What you
Monte,
do
like that?
Yeah.
That
the
gave
Iowa
me some
State angle for sure.
End.
Ross probably didn't watch it because his Hawks weren't going anywhere.
No, I didn't. Well, that has nothing to do with it.
It has a little bit to do with it.
It honestly has nothing to do with it. If there was a Hawkeye or a Cyclone that was in that running to be a top five pick, and I can't even say that.
What about
when
Reiser
and when Royce, when those guys were going to be lottery picks? No, not really. Not really. And maybe it would change if there's a Hawkeye, but here's my thing with the draft, Mark. And I think the NBA draft, to me, is the single most overhyped sporting event on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you go back and you actually look at the impact that the NBA draft has, it's minimal.
Yeah.
You know,
once you get past the top 15,
well, we had this
really...
whole thing with Travis on Tuesday when you were gone. Travis Hines filled in for you. And Travis, of course, a big Timberwolves fan. And this article came out in SI with David Kuhn, the guy that was the GM in 2009.
Yeah.
Banner year for the Timberwolves. They have the fifth and sixth pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And they go with Ricky Rubio, who doesn't play for them for another 2 years.
Yep.
And I can't even remember the name of the dude that they picked sixth ahead of Steph Curry.
Yeah.
But in researching that story and wanting to get my ducks in a row before I talked to Travis, I pulled up that 2009 draft. Blake Griffin was the number one pick.
Good pick. Solid.
James Harden was the third pick.
Great pick.
Steph Curry was that seventh pick.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, it was dudes I'd never heard of. DeMar DeRozan was in that list somewhere.
Yeah.
But we're looking at the top 10 picks from 8 years ago. These guys should be dudes that I would at least know or remember some sort of impact they had in the game. And there's five dudes in the entire draft.
Yeah.
That I now know. So that I look back at those and I look at the 2010, 11, 12 draft, and you can look at those and go, you know, there are a handful of guys that make an impact.
Yeah.
And that's it. Maybe five.
One huge difference between the NBA draft and your NFL draft, kind of, and especially Major League Baseball, is that in the NBA, the number one pick rarely misses. That pick is usually as solid as it can be. And those guys do play 10, 12 years, and they become superstars.
Marcus, because we hear a lot of times about the bus.
Yeah.
But if you look back at those number one picks, that's a great point. In the NFL, Major League Baseball draft, even in the NHL, you can look at those number one picks. You don't know who those guys are.
Yeah.
It's rare to find an NBA draft where you don't know what team that guy played for most of his career.
Let me, as Chris is breaking more news over there, let me get your take on this specific question.
Okay.
What does the draft, how does that play into college basketball as a whole? You had last night, I think in the first round, you had 16 freshmen, 18-year-old or freshmen drafted. I think you had two college seniors.
Mm-hmm.
drafted.
And I think what they
That's
were
a huge difference. So what that tells me is talent is talent. They don't need that year of college. These are great players regardless. It's kind of a sham that they need to go to college in the first place and waste time in classes, etc. Ultimately, if that trend continues, will college basketball change in that way? Will we go back to where they don't have to put a year in because it's pointless?
Yeah, we will get to that point, Mark, and it won't change college basketball a bit.
We just have to understand that college basketball is maybe, yes, it's a breeding ground for future NBA players, but it's not primarily what it's there for. It's really its own thing.
What's big about college basketball is the tournament.
Yeah. And
if you look at TV ratings, if you look at revenue, like it's big here in Central Iowa because we don't have pro sports.
Yeah.
But nationwide, college basketball's regular season is basically irrelevant. Really is. Like in the big cities, they don't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
The NCAA tournament comes up, the gambling gets kicked up. I mean, clearly the Cinderella thing, people love it, and that's when it really becomes huge. But I've told the story a bunch. When we get to New York for the Sweet 16, they didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't even know what was happening. I mean, it's really a regional sport. It's a lot like baseball. I think baseball is the same way. We've had this talk. I mean, you've got your national hot spots, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Chicago, you got Boston, you got New York. But, like, the reason baseball is monetized the way it is because of regional television networks. And it just reminds me a lot of the way college basketball is set up. Here's my deal on the draft. It's just like a music genre. Not everybody likes it, correct? Mm-hmm. Some people really enjoy it. We had a freaking party for it last night. Me and Bloom and John Walters got together and we had a party.
Were you guys analyzing like what pick was coming next?
Oh yeah. Like it was we turned it into a game where Bloom had to like make the picks and stuff like that.
How good was he?
Pretty good. In fact, he did a draft primer for Cyclone Fanatic.
Yeah.
The first 12 picks he nailed.
Wow. That's incredible.
It was incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But how it's changed for me, and this is where I found myself really feeling this way last night. I've gotten to know these guys, and Iowa State's had a lot of guys drafted over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It's changed it because now I'm nervous at 9 o'clock. I was sitting there with my wife like, man, I'm going to be sick if Monte doesn't get drafted. The guy who came back for his senior year, when Monte Morris first arrived at Iowa State, the June before his freshman year, they were seriously contemplating redshirting him.
Yeah.
He's like 150 pounds soaking wet, whatever he was. You watch the guy grow up for 4 years. And I remember when Royce, like I was at Royce's draft party, Craig's draft party, and you're sitting there watching these guys, and it's like there's this whole human element to it that you don't really realize when, you know, Lonzo Ball's up on TV. It's like we think of him for his dad. Like, these are human beings and like their entire future. Monte has this huge draft party last night in Flint, Michigan, where they ran out of ballroom. There's 100 people there. What if he wouldn't have gotten drafted?
Yeah.
Getting drafted in the second round doesn't mean anything because nothing's guaranteed, but it's just like symbolic.
That's what's interesting to me. What does it mean? Because George, you know, hasn't played a lot.
I think 20% of second round draft picks make the league.
So it almost is a little bit irrelevant versus being a free agent. The guy that I was happy for was the guy at a Clemson Blossing game. Did you see that? He hung out the whole night.
Poor guy.
He was picked 58, right?
Like, he's one of the last guys taken.
You know, and he had his little posse there. That would have been embarrassing for him if he didn't get picked and hung out, but he just made it before pick 60. So I just wonder if like someone said, oh, you're going to be a high pick, and that's why he was there. He's just like, let's go check this thing out. You know, hopefully I'll get picked.
Mark, did you have a game set up for us?
No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
Oh, I was all excited for some game.
I thought Mark had a game.
I don't have a game.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to make sure that
we had
a
game. What kind of game do you usually play?
You guys
want
to play rock, paper, scissors or something?
No,
it's
a bad radio game. We've
tried Rochambeau?
There you go.
Like, where's it called that? Everywhere but here? Is that a foreign term?
No, Rochambeau. That's
same thing.
I referred to it as
rock, paper, scissors.
I referred to it as Rochambeau.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Sheldon version of it on... what's that show called on CBS?
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
One
he has
of the
his
most
own.
Overrated shows of all time.
The most predictable Ross opinion ever that he doesn't like Big Bang Theory.
You don't like scientific humor?
No, I don't like laugh tracks. I don't like
Do they have a laugh track, not a live
How
audience?
Do you not
every
know
Every sitcom
this?
Has a laugh
no,
track.
No, not every sitcom. That's
yes,
another,
they do.
No, it doesn't. No.
Which
Modern Family doesn't. Life in Pieces doesn't.
I've never seen.
They have
one of
no
those.
Laugh track.
No
at all.
Laugh track. You get to decide what's funny. It's a brilliant concept.
It's funny when you say that because obviously many
greatest
shows have
sitcom
it
of all time.
But when you think about it, you start thinking about, okay, which shows have laugh tracks? Is it most of the comedies have them?
Well, the Big Bang Theory is atrocious.
I love that show.
Anyway.
We quit watching it, though, because we just don't have time to watch with Cameron anymore. But, like, we used to DVR it and watch it every week, Ashley and I would.
I think it's smart humor.
My favorite episode.
Yeah, I like it.
It's clean.
My favorite episode was the one where the guys are all being all nerdy and they're nervous to talk to that girl. And then
the show's evolved, right?
Like
you've missed out.
There's all sorts of hilarity that ensues amongst them trying to talk to a girl.
They all have significant others now. We've watched them grow up.
Yeah,
it's
one of them's
real.
Blossom, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is Blossom.
Did you ever watch...
Whoa!
Did you ever watch Everybody Loves Raymond?
Yes, yeah. I love that show.
I think that was a smart
show.
I like
it. One of my favorite shows ever.
Speaking of documentaries, there is a great one about them trying to do Everyone Loves Raymond, or Everybody... What was it? Everyone Loves Raymond?
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Everybody. They're trying to do it in Russia. I think it was called... I think it was called Exporting Raymond. Okay. Either Importing or Exporting Raymond. And it's fantastic. It's the writers of the show trying to pitch the show in Russia. It's
brilliant writing is when you can do a show about a topic and they never mention it. The famous one from Seinfeld is The Contest, right?
Yes.
They never mention what they're talking about. Do you remember the episode where Raymond's mother does an art piece? Or it might have been his wife. It was his wife, I think. Someone was in an art class and they did a painting or a picture that looked like a vagina. And like everybody realized it but her. And they were trying to tell, like, she wanted to show it off. And like, they were trying to tell her not to and didn't want to hurt her feelings.
Show, man.
I think it was his mother that did it. I can't remember.
Yeah,
but
it's Exporting Raymond. I looked it up. That's the name.
That's
of it.
Great.
Exporting
Raymond. Can we get, like, some TV, like, YouTube clips of that? Or, like, do they exist? Or
Well, I don't think the show actually got it. It's a really good look into how humor is different in different cultures.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't a show that...
It didn't take off.
It just didn't take off. It didn't grab hold of people like they thought.
So it was like anti-The Office, what The Office did here
exactly.
in the United States.
Yeah,
because that was originally British, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Good stuff.
There was.
Did you like Home Improvement? Did you guys like that?
Yeah.
Well, my dad owned a hardware store when I was...
So you probably loved it.
I liked Al Borland.
We liked that.
Al was a good character.
Everybody loved Al.
He was a good character.
What was the neighbor's name?
Wilson.
Wilson, yeah.
With the fence in front of him all the time.
Then they tried to change one of the boys or something, didn't they? Didn't they change the actor?
They had the boys.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas was like,
or did he just mature one off season and all of a sudden he came back looking like a different guy?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas was.
Oh, you're talking about Zach.
He was the one that got sexy. He was the sexy one, right? He was
and
on
that,
Teen
and that
Pop.
Really, his like career really took off.
What happened to him? Where is that dude? How come he didn't Leonardo DiCaprio and become like
it's tough
a
business, man?
Probably because he's not as talented as Leonardo DiCaprio.
All he had was that DNA we were talking about earlier.
Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Did you ever see that Christmas movie with Jonathan Taylor Thomas where he's like the Santa Claus? He has the Santa Claus glued onto his body.
I'm aware of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good movie. Jingle All the Way. No, that's Schwarzenegger.
Ross, Chris, you have zero authority on Christmas movies.
Hey,
zero.
Christmas with the Cranks.
Hey,
you've seen that one.
A horrible,
phenomenal movie.
Christmas movie.
Phenomenal movie.
So bad.
All right, it's June, so we probably shouldn't dive too much into Christmas.
No, hey,
but Ross, what is your favorite Christmas movie?
Christmas Vacation, hands down. Yeah,
everybody's.
Yeah.
So,
and the famous question is: Die Hard a Christmas movie?
No, it's a movie around Christmas time. And those are two completely different
things. A lot of people consider that. You'll see that on Christmas
lists. I get that. And I appreciate those arguments. That's a fun conversation. But no, it's a Christmas movie is a movie that's centered around the holiday.
Yeah.
It's supposed to make you feel good about the season.
Don't even have to make me feel good. Okay. Four Christmases is a funny movie.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Not necessarily a feel good to watch Vince Vaughn get his butt kicked when he goes home.
That scene when they're playing the
game. At the end of the movie, you feel good about
okay,
life.
Okay, I'll give you that. But I would say Christmas movie doesn't necessarily have to be... I would even say Gremlins is more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard because it's actually about the holiday. There are gifts involved. There's Christmas trees. There's several things that represent the holiday. With Die Hard, it's just, they were having a Christmas party at the...
Nakatomi Tower.
The terrorists came.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Anyway.
It's great.
But that's...
Cranks is phenomenal. This is what I was going to tell you. So I watched the draft with Walters last night,
Yeah.
And so the ambush that I walked into on Murph and Andy yesterday with the movies, Walters told me, he's like, yeah, I would have gotten like two or three. And they're completely misinterpreting like what culture is by that show. Walters thinks that they set me up and that it was a really deal I got put into.
What happened? I didn't hear it.
Because Walters is like, I've seen most of those movies, but it was 20 years ago. I don't remember every line from every
movie.
Was it
a movie
you're not
quiz?
Cultured if you don't know movies. I agree with Walters.
Some movies.
Of course you agree with Walters. John, don't do this to him. Like, come on.
Walters
John.
Is right.
Don't you need to know some lines from movies even if you haven't seen the movie?
Frankly,
my dear, I don't give a damn.
Why does that make me a more accomplished human being if I watch more movies?
But
that doesn't make any sense to me.
There's just cultural relevance to it. So if I said, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, do you know what movie that's from?
That's from Casablanca.
No, that's from Gone with the Wind.
Oh, Gone with the Wind. Okay.
Right?
I didn't know that.
Hey, he at least knew it was an old movie, right? But you don't even have to have seen the movie to know the line, right?
Here's the thing about this.
How would you know the line if you've never seen it?
Hold on.
Because this
is a moot point.
In the parlance of our times.
All of it's a moot point.
Big Lebowski.
Mark, they played for him the clip of Matthew Broderick.
Okay.
Saying, you know, life comes at you fast.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Chris's response to that was that Joe Pesci?
Sounded like Joe Pesci.
Oh, no, wait. Man. The better one.
Did it not sound like Joe Pesci?
Joe Pesci should have been like the two youths.
I'm just going to give you a phrase, and you tell me what movie this was.
Okay.
Royale with Cheese.
Royale with Cheese is from, I'm drawing a blank, Pulp Fiction.
There you go. Le Big Mac. They played that entire clip for him of, hey, what do they call a quarter pounder in France? Well, yep. They don't call it quarter pounder.
Yeah, and I was really, I should have got a half point for this.
They've got, and so Chris says, after the end of this clip, when it goes to, what do they call a Big Mac? Oh, they call it a Le Big Mac. Okay, Chris, what movie is that? Chris's response is, that's that Jim Brewer movie with him and his buddies.
The one
movie Jim Brewer made?
When you said that, honestly, my brain froze. I'm like, what in the hell is Chris even referencing? Now, here's the rub, Mark. He gets it. Like, after he says that, and Andrew goes, what the hell?
Because I was thinking drugs.
You think that it's half-baked? And Chris goes, oh, no, it's Pulp Fiction. He gets it on his own. Nobody tells him. Then he admits he's seen the movie.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie, so I should get a half point. No, dude, you get 2 points taken away from you.
Stop
because
it.
You've seen the movie and you missed it that badly.
You want to know the God's honest truth about Pulp Fiction? First, the time I watched that movie was the first night I ever tasted alcohol.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
So now you understand why I may not have remembered.
That movie has a lot of parts in it that are well known.
How
a bottle of André Champagne.
Zed's dead,
pretty
baby.
Quick.
Zed's dead.
How un-G-rated can we be here?
As much as you want. Like,
can I pull back a little bit here?
Just don't drop F-bombs because then we'll lose our clean thing on iTunes.
I don't know if I should even share. I will.
You should.
You got to go now.
This is why we have you on here.
Nobody else is listening.
It's funny that you say, you're going to think differently of me after I tell you this.
No, I love it. I love it already.
That's almost impossible.
It's so funny to me that you say, first time you drank alcohol. Because I can remember tripping on mushrooms watching Pulp Fiction. So it's just so weird how our lives have been so different, Chris, you know? I will tell you. That's
illegal.
The whole thing with it was legal then, a long time ago.
Okay.
Different state.
Got it.
It is funny how that conversation about the watch giving the guy dysentery, man, that's a funny, funny scene if you're on the...
It's funny if you're sober.
You got the right chemicals in you. That can put you on the floor.
Dysentery just reminds me of Oregon Trail.
Yeah. Fording the river. Is that what they call that?
Yeah, just I used to just chalk it and float it.
I don't know if I ever made it in that game. Did you guys play that game in your computer lab at school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was always cognizant of the
computer
local
lab.
Indian tribes.
Was it a floppy disk? Was it some type of a disk?
We didn't have a computer lab at East High. We had a room with a computer.
But we're about the same age. This was elementary
school. Which was
school
invented
time.
At the Iowa State.
I remember playing Oregon Trail at Fellows Elementary in Ames.
Well, you were a little bit higher class up there in Ames than we were over on the East Side,
right,
I think.
I
don't remember playing Oregon Trail until high school.
Yeah, you were way behind the times.
Dude, we learned how to type on word processors at East. And that was a big deal because we actually had electronic word processors. They weren't typewriters. And I think we were like the first class or something to not have to use typewriters.
Man, that would be a total bitch to use a typewriter today.
Oh, my gosh.
Like the typo, you have to, like, the whiteout thing.
Well, you see, I still have some notes. Some of the guys here at at WHO, Keith Kirkpatrick, will still write me notes on his typewriter.
Yeah.
Why would
old
he do that?
School.
Because it's what he's used to doing.
I think there's an addiction to the sound. A lot of people like the sound a typewriter
Chris,
makes.
Chris, if you look at that note up there, you can see the whiteout on there, like when he makes a mistake.
Oh, yeah, I can see it right here.
Yeah.
Do you guys, by the way, Murph posted, I think it was directed towards Ed Wilson the other day. Do you guys get, not a lot of it, but do you get hate mail here for your show? Literal physical hate mail?
So what happens with that stuff, Mark, is we have to put all that stuff into a public file. So if anybody that writes us a letter wants to come back years later and prove that we actually received it and read it, we have to be able to show that to them. So we actually have to keep a public file. So when Chris and I get those letters, they end up with me. I read every letter of the letters, every word of them, put them back in their envelope, and then we take them down and we put them in the public file. The last one that Chris and I got was about 3 weeks ago, and it was 4 pages of handwritten note, and the first line of it was...
Was it anonymous?
No. Guy's name was on it.
Okay.
His name was Vern.
Okay.
The first
Let's
line of it
Vern some
was,
credit, then.
Allow me to be... quick and concise.
That was the first line. Later.
4 pages later. Oh, and basically what it was, the guy was upset with Drake Relay's coverage, the lack of Drake Relay's coverage.
Okay. All right.
And he had called into the show to bitch to Chris and I that we weren't doing enough about it. And then when the relays were over, he waited a week and wrote us a letter that basically, well, I don't even say it was a hate mail letter, but it basically was, you're not alone.
Yeah.
USA Today didn't cover this thing. The Register really didn't cover it that well.
You sure Vern wasn't actually Eric Charter? Sounds like my brother.
Well,
he's a huge track geek.
Real into track. And the problem is, and I experience this with racing all the time. Ross does with wrestling and to a certain extent even baseball.
Absolutely.
These days. Like, I can be as passionate as I want about one of these niche sports, but that still doesn't mean that the mainstream media. If Ross and I talked about amateur track or professional track, whatever, we wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
If we did that consistently.
There's proof of that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are guys that had these jobs in this market that did that, and they aren't working.
Same with wrestling.
So
McCool, what's the guy's name? Who was the best wrestling writer in the country.
Good way to put it.
That's a content letter. Do you ever get the ones that just say, you guys suck?
Well, I get that on Twitter all the time.
Yeah. Twitter's the new way for that. I mean, people will throw jabs at you. On Twitter,
we don't get it a lot.
Do you respond?
We really
or do you guys
don't.
Just leave it alone at this
like.
Point? You like it?
Oh, I love it. If there was a love button on Twitter, I would click it.
Really?
You know, and that's the thing. Like, Iowa State fans don't hate you.
No.
Iowa fans used to hate me, but
they're coming around.
I really think they've come around. Yeah. But, I mean, there's still a core of them that do.
I know. I think you guys are fair, though. Yes, you have your teams, but as far I've got a lot of Hawk fans in my life that, like, you know, bash that I like the Cyclones all the time.
With the thing that saved,
you guys are fair about
the thing
it.
That saved me, Chris, with a lot of Cyclone fans was when Fred was thinking about leaving, and we had a guy call into the morning show and talk about how he was a horrible basketball coach. I don't remember what it was. Tried to downplay the success that Fred Hoiberg had had, and I tried to turn it around on him and say, when you go to your cubicle in the fall and the Hawkeyes are 9-2, doesn't it piss you off when the Cyclone fan next to you makes fun, you know, the fact that Iowa State won earlier in the year I was having a great year and you have to go to work and hear this guy talk about how Iowa isn't as good as you think. You're that dude. Iowa State's doing this great thing. Fred Hoiberg has done this amazing job and you still want to go to work every day and tell the Cyclone in the cubicle next to you how they suck and you're always going to suck.
I actually think I remember that. Yeah,
and I don't. And it was a promo that ran for a long time.
That promo
was when Cyclone fans were like, maybe he's not the jerk I thought he was. So
yeah,
and I've never hated Iowa State. I never.
Well, I grew up
that.
An Iowa fan, so I really don't have that.
Right.
Here's the problem that I had earlier in my career, and I don't really have anymore because I've lightened up a lot. I didn't hate Iowa. I hated their fans who bitched at me on Twitter.
Yep.
Those are the people I hated. And I wanted
plan sick days.
Like when Iowa would lose, I would check their Twitter accounts because I like to watch them suffer.
Yeah.
Those people. It has nothing to do with Kirk Ferentz, nothing to do with Fran McCaffrey. Yeah. I actually like those guys.
It's just them and their crappy
outfits. But now I'm not like that. Like, I've really grown up. I'm way past that. That was like 4 years ago. Like,
I think in your industry, because you guys are so public, obviously, if you focus on every one, that's all you'd focus on.
Oh, yeah.
If you're doing that, then you're going to get fired and you're going to lose your job. Yep. Like, yeah.
Reality is, the people that really love what you guys do, those are the ones that never say anything, unfortunately.
Hey, that's a good part of this. I saw a guy the other day, guy that runs a restaurant in town, put something on social media saying, man, all we get is negative feedback. Well, that's when people are going to get online. If they're mad about something, they're going to go do this.
Yeah.
Have you ever called a how's my driving number?
No.
Never done that? Have you ever done that?
No.
Chris?
No, I haven't.
I did one time. And it was to compliment a dude.
Really? And was it a real person or was it a recording?
No, it was real. That answered the phone. It was a real person.
Okay.
This guy, it was a traffic jam on 235, and this trucker was letting people in left and right. And I just thought, I mean, most truckers probably do that. And it was just, the mood hit me. I was stuck behind this guy.
The number's right there.
I called the number, and man, you would have thought I was making a phone call from Mars. When this guy answered the phone, I tried to say, yeah, I got the vehicle number is this. I just wanted to call and say,
what's your complaint?
Yeah, right. It was like, we don't have a compliments box. What do you mean?
Yeah.
And that's just the product.
Mark, I tried to tell you a couple weeks ago. You got one of those haters who's no longer on the website was coming at you.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, like, we look at the forums on Cyclone Fanatic and we're like, wow. I mean, either there's a lot of feedback or there's not. Let me tell you this, that like 80%, I think the last I checked, of the people on our website have never posted on our forum.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I believe that.
Yeah, what percentage of radio listeners call a radio show?
I've been told before, you know better than me, like, one out of like 300 will actually pick up the phone and call.
Less than 8%. Okay. I always turn this around on people.
That's what John Sellers told me once. So.
Mark Charter, you spend a lot of time listening to radio. How many times have you picked up a phone and called into a radio show?
Very, very few. But here's what's funny too. Obviously, on a message board, it is anonymous. You're behind a screen name, obviously. And yes, you're somewhat anonymous on a phone call. But I've been on the radio in studio like we are right now quite a bit. And when I'm on the radio, I've never felt an ounce of nervousness at all, right?
Yeah.
The times that I called back in the day, I called sound off or whatever, waiting there to be on the phone, like, I felt nervous for some reason. And I don't know why. That doesn't make any sense to me. But I think people don't call more because they don't want to sound like an idiot. They can't hit delete and start their comment over.
Yeah.
They don't know. It's weird because the timing's off and they're, you know, you're listening to them over the phone. I think that's more the reason than they have nothing to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris hates Adventureland, but you don't. The space shot at Adventureland.
Yeah.
You get on this. That's the one, Chris, that shoots you straight up.
I've been on it.
Okay. I contest that the most nervous moment of that entire park, you can ride every ride in Adventureland. The most nervous you're ever going to be is when you get on the space shot and it raises you up about 10 feet and then it stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're anticipating.
And you don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think, Mark, that's part of calling into a radio show. You're in that 10-foot high mode. You're just, somebody else is going to hit the button and boom, the ride starts.
Yeah.
When you're here, you feel like you're in a little bit more of control.
You control the button.
You see when the guy is going to hit the button.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't know.
Maybe that makes sense.
We got to go, but a tip to any listener who calls into shows or has thought about it, you really are a prop. At that point, we don't do that very often. We like to make the listeners a part of our show. We love it when we have callers. But if you listen to the pros, if you listen to the Colin Cowherds, those guys, the real pros who are doing this at a national level, they'll let you talk to a point where you sound stupid, and they will cut you at that point, and then they'll rail on you. You are nothing but a prop to them. Am I accurate?
You're 100% right.
If I can throw in a tip too, don't ask the host how they're doing. Just get to the
I'm
point.
I'm okay with that because it starts a conversation and it can put the
hey guys,
the
great weather.
First thing weather I would say there. Is don't call a radio station unless you actually want to go on the air because that takes away. There's a producer in there who's working and
distracting.
Do people do that?
Like
probably 5 times a show.
Just to tell the producer something?
Yeah, you know, hey, I'm driving. I can't wait to go on the air, but make sure the guys know XYZ. That sort of stuff is great, but a lot of people call in and say, I don't want to go on the air, but let me tell you my take on this. And you see our producer in there for five minutes.
Like, I don't care.
Trying to work with one hand while he's talking to some guy that doesn't want to take part in the show. The other piece of advice, if you're calling in, this is a classic mistake for callers. You have some great point that you want to add to the conversation. It's profound. And you've, okay, I'm going to pick up the phone, I'm going to call Chris and Ross, and I'm going to blow their minds with this. And then all of a sudden, right before we bring you on the air, Chris makes some comment about Christmas with the Cranks. Okay? And now all of a sudden, when you get on the air, you've got something funny to add to the Christmas with the Cranks conversation. You say your joke, and we cut you off. We think you're calling in to say one thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And our brains didn't realize that you're 15 seconds behind us, that you're calling for that topic that we just moved past. You say your joke about Christmas with the Cranks. Hey, Bill, thanks a lot for the phone call. Talk to you later. Hey, when we get back. And now all of a sudden your profound point is gone.
Yeah.
Just remember what – I'm not saying write it down, but when you call in, get to your guns.
And always turn your radio down.
Turn your radio down. Do you think your listeners actually like listening? If you guys did, we're going to do a straight hour of phone calls.
Do your listeners like that? Our listeners are very, they wouldn't want us to do it every day, but I think like if we do it like once every 2 weeks, I think they'd love it.
We have really smart listeners. We get great phone calls that guys that really
add
stuff.
Yeah, we generally don't get much trash.
No. What's that one dude, Milwaukee? He'll call in every now and again.
I
think he's on mushrooms.
So he's like a character to our audience.
Probably watching Pulp Fiction somewhere.
I don't know. I think we have good callers. And I think we've kind of trained our callers too. Like we make it very obvious when we want callers and when we don't.
Right.
And they react to it.
Okay. I love working with you, dude. I know I tell you that a lot, but
feeling's very mutual.
Yeah, the bromance continues.
It's very real.
Do we want to plug next week? As always, Ross. Thank you for coming in. The Ted Flint.
What day are we doing that?
Thursday.
Okay.
Next Thursday, Ted Flint.
There's a lot of serendipity here because I'm going to be on Ted's show Saturday night.
What is it called? Something about being drunk.
We're not that drunk.
I'm planning on being pretty drunk.
I've been on it once. I was drunk.
You were gassed.
And then thank God for Ted because he's been a friend for a long time now. So I was supposed to be on like a year ago, and I'm like, hey, I'm doing this thing. I was with Tim Mullen from Nebraska Furniture Mart. We had a poker game, and I was like, Ted, like I'm doing this deal. I don't know when I'm going to be done with this tournament. I'll call you later, and we can do the podcast. I called Ted at like 1:30. I'd been at Founders for like 4 hours. Just a total disaster. And Ted's like, dude, I'm not putting you on.
That bad.
Smart move by Ted.
Thank God, thank you, Ted. I would have gone on, and I generally, you know me, I'm pretty anal about not crossing a line when I'm on the radio, more so than you.
Yeah, right.
And Ted's just like, no, man, I'm not putting you on. Like because I think I just called him. I'm like, hey, douchebag. Like, you know,
let's do this.
Yeah. So
let's not do this.
All right. Mark's got some great real estate advice for you. Charter House is kicking ass. Beautiful house in the Bonneran area you just put up.
You should buy that.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. We'll sell it.
Well, Mark's got some great real estate tips coming up right now here on the podcast.
Hey guys, Mark here. Hope you enjoyed that podcast. Today I want to talk about a controversial topic. I see this one on the forums from time to time, and it is a for sale by owner. Does it make sense to list your own house? And obviously I'm coming from a perspective where I get paid to help people list their house. So am I biased? Hell yes, I am. But I've been doing this 12 years and I've seen a lot of stuff. So hopefully you'll take my opinion seriously, that I am trying to give you good information versus just information that's going to line my pockets. There's two reasons that for sale by owners mainly aren't successful. And when I say not successful, you're going to have people out there that say, oh, well, that's bull crap. I sold my own house, or my buddy sold his own house, and it was easy. Absolutely. There are some success stories with for sale by owners. You know, clearly, they do not all fail. Statistically speaking, about 75% of people that try for sale by owner end up switching to an agent. So there are 25% that get the job done. And I can't say whether they do it right or not because we're not part of that transaction. Who knows? Do they underprice their house, overprice it? We don't know that. But we do know that a lot of people switch. So let's focus on why for sale by owners are not successful. There's two main reasons for that, guys. One is marketing. Simply put, an agent, and myself specifically, has access to much more marketing than the typical for sale by owner does. And that's through partnerships with websites. That's having Facebook business pages and doing boosted posts. That's through a network of hundreds of websites that we can be a part of. And mainly the big one is the MLS. When you're for sale by owner, you don't get access to the MLS, and that drives the majority of sales. To not be on the MLS is a huge negative for sale by owner. I can't overstate how important it is to be on the MLS. That is where typical agents go to look for properties, and those agents are representing buyers. So when you're not there, you have buyers out there that simply are not seeing your property. So marketing is a huge one. The second one is what I call consumer confidence. When somebody drives by a house and sees a Charterhouse Real Estate sign, Remax, Coldwell Banker, Iowa Realty, whatever, they automatically, even if they don't think they do, they have confidence that that transaction on that house will be handled appropriately. They know there's an agent involved. They know that if they make a call to see it, that will be handled correctly. They know that it was probably priced according to comps and something was done on an analysis perspective to price that house. Whereas when you drive up and see that famous red for sale by owner sign, what do you think about? Well, a lot of people think, oh, great, I have to talk directly to the owners, which a lot of people don't want to do because it's awkward. They're thinking, how did that person price their house? We all know that owners typically think more of their house than it's actually worth. They're proud of it. They put, you know, money into the backyard and they think, you know, that should be dollar for dollar return. So a lot of times for sale by owners are overpriced or they're too prideful in their home and they don't want to negotiate properly. So there's a lack of consumer confidence when you see that red for sale by owner sign. You don't know what's going to happen when you pick up the phone and call them. Are they going to be easy to work with, difficult to work with? You don't know. There's just a lot of unknowns. Now, again, for sale by owners, they're not going away. People are going to continue to try to save that commission. I get it. There's statistics I could spout out that say that real estate agents sell homes quicker and for more money than for sale by owners, and I believe that that's true. So the question becomes, how much money do you really save? If you sell it for much less than we could have, are you really saving that much? Probably not. And then what happens afterwards? Did you do the paperwork correctly? All of those things I could get into as well, which I'm not going to do, but I did want to give the perspective on the marketing and the consumer confidence issue to at least get people to think about, is it the right play to try to do this without a professional? It's kind of like changing your oil. You can do it yourself or you can have a professional do it. It's probably going to be easy, quicker, cleaner for them to do it. Yep, you're going to pay a little bit of money, but you don't have to get your hands dirty. You can save your time. And there's reasons to go that route. This is kind of the same thing. All right, guys, that's it. Remember, if you want to connect with Charterhouse Real Estate and you don't live here locally, not a problem. If you want to buy or sell a house anywhere in the country, we can refer you to an agent. When we do that, we get money. You get a great agent. Everybody wins. And it's a great way to support Fanatic. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.